Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Farrar. And Vince, we are joined by a very special guest.
That's right. As knowledgeable as he gets on the college football playoff, college football overall, he's on ESPN Radio. You see him on ESPN Television. Articles on ESPN.com. Friend of the station, at J. Brad Edwards on Twitter. The great Brad Edwards joins us here on Sports Talk. Brad, Vince, and Jimmy in Knoxville. How are you, Brad?
I'm having an unusual day. You probably saw the news of the hurricane / tropical storm that came up the East Coast yesterday. Well, Connecticut, where I live, got absolutely blitzed, and there is power out all over the place. We lost power about 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon. Haven't gotten it back, and I think it must have knocked over some cell phone towers too. I can get a signal to talk, but I can't get a strong enough signal to connect to the internet. So I have heard things today, like that the Big Ten released its schedule and that UConn isn't playing this season, but I have not been able to read anything. So you guys know more than I do about whatever has happened in college football over the last 24 hours.
Well, hopefully things will get back to close to normal from that standpoint soon for you, but appreciate the qualifier. We'll start big picture with you, Brad. All these conferences in the Power Five, you thought that maybe they could potentially work together, but they've all seemed to go their own direction and do their own thing. What do you think about that element of each of the conferences in terms of schedules doing their own thing?
I'm surprised that some of them didn't do a better job of working together. I get that the Pac-12 is in a lot of ways off on its own as far as, you know, maybe having slightly different priorities than the others. Obviously, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 have a long relationship around the Rose Bowl and you know, some non-conference scheduling related to that. And so I'm not surprised that they ended up deciding to do the season the same way, although obviously the Big Ten is going to start the season earlier, allow more weeks to play those games. So that's a little different. But I did think that the I guess we would classify as the Southern conferences, the ACC, SEC, and Big 12, some of the Big 12 schools would be classified by some people as Southern, that they didn't work together more, and especially when it came to the in-state rivalry games with the ACC and SEC. So I was surprised that you didn't see more collaboration there. But at the same time, you know, with no one in charge, what should we expect other than everyone just acts in, you know, what they believe is their own best interest? Because they've all lost so much money at this point that they're trying to salvage everything the best they can. And so if you're trying to work with someone else, it makes it more difficult. So I guess we should kind of expect that there's been a little bit of a rogue attitude here.
You know, not too far away from you, as you pointed out, UConn decided that they were not going to play football in 2020. I know this can be a wave that you ride like we do from day to day, from hour to hour on how you feel about the season. But do you think that UConn's decision will have any sort of ripple effect throughout college football?
I don't, and I'll tell you why. It's because I live in Connecticut, and so I'm aware of some of the factors that go into this. Now, I'm sure, you know, some of your listeners are aware that UConn played in the American Athletic Conference all the way through last season, and they were going to be an independent this year. And what I'm about to say might have been an issue even if they had stayed in the American, because the conference is so big and it covers such a huge range of the United States. But as an independent, you know, now that they don't have a conference schedule to fall back on, and, you know, obviously they lost some games because of the Power Five leagues doing their own thing, they're trying to piece together a schedule at the last minute as an independent. And the state of Connecticut has declared more than half of the United States right now to be a danger zone. So if you're a resident of the state of Connecticut and you go to, I think it's somewhere around 28 states right now, when you come back to Connecticut, you have to quarantine for 2 weeks before you can go back out in public. That's the law. And so if you're looking at UConn trying to put together a schedule as an independent, if that list doesn't change, they're facing a situation where if they go out and play a non-conference game on the road, they have to come back and quarantine for 2 weeks. You can't do that and play in consecutive weekends. So it basically makes it untenable to play a college football season. I think that had as much to do with it as anything else. So while, yeah, it is scary to see an FBS team choose to scrap the season, I don't think that it's apples and oranges when you're comparing it to, you know, the Power Five leagues, and I don't think it's any indication of what they might be likely to do. But with every domino that falls, there is kind of a fear factor that builds, and I'm not saying it has zero impact. I just don't think it has much.
Brad, with most of your Power Five conferences going in the direction of conference games only or only one non-conference game, is that going to make it harder for the College Football Selection Committee to decipher the four best teams in the country?
I think it makes it not only harder, but almost impossible to do it with, I don't want to say integrity, because I don't think that's the issue. But I guess this is how I'd phrase it. In the typical season where you have a 12-game schedule, it's often difficult, we all know, to distinguish between Team 4 and Team 5, and sometimes between, you know, 4, 5, and 6. There have been, you know, I wouldn't say any huge controversies with the selection committee, but there have definitely been some years where people thought that, hey, you know what, 5 might have been better than 4, or maybe even 6 better than 4. When you reduce the sample size from 12 games to 10, 11 for the ACC, but 10 for everyone else, you're already making it more difficult by reducing the sample size. But when on top of that, now you're basically self-contained within your conference, there are no crossover data points. There's no game being played between one of the better teams in League A and one of the better teams in League B, and then another game between one of the better teams in League B and one of the better teams in League C, where you can start to try to draw some conclusions. Like last year, late in the year, while I think it's a mistake to compare scores, you know, where you're just taking one opponent and doing that, the committee was discussing the fact that Oregon had lost to Auburn in the season opener, and if Alabama had gone into Jordan-Hare and beaten Auburn, and then they're comparing Alabama and Oregon, the feeling was that based on, you know, that data, that Alabama would probably come out ahead. Now you have none of that. And while we'll go into the season with assumptions that, you know, the SEC is better than, you know, than the ACC and the Pac-12, or the Big Ten is better than the Big 12, whatever it may be, we have no way of knowing that for sure if none of these teams are playing each other. I mean, we, you know, like I said, our preconceived notions based on the recent seasons are what drives that. And so I think that it's next to impossible to say with certainty this year that even that Team 3 is better than Team 6. I mean, it just becomes a lot more difficult to navigate if you're the selection committee. And so, I mean, that's why I think that, and I understand that it's not as easy to do as it is to say, but if there was ever a year where you should just say, you know what, the Power 5 conference champs are getting into the playoff automatically, this is the year that you should do it, because you just don't have any points of comparison to be able to say that this one-loss champion of this league is better or more deserving than the one-loss champion of that league.
Well, not that I'm holding my breath, but what are the chances of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee expanding it from 4 to 8 teams and the feasibility involving, like, TV contracts and bowl contracts?
Well, I'm going to be honest about this, which is the ESPN, and I'm not speaking on behalf of my company, but I'm just telling you something you already know, which is any network that makes its business, you know, televising sports has gotten crushed in the last few months because there's been no sports to televise. So ESPN needs to make up for lost revenue, just like these conferences need their teams to be able to make up for lost revenue, because they've already been crushed even before the season started. And obviously, if they don't end up playing all the games, they're going to get crushed even more. So everyone's looking for more money. And if there are companies out there that are willing to put up the dollars to advertise on the expanded playoff, or to sponsor the games, where not only could ESPN make more money, but the conferences involved could make more money, then it's an absolute no-brainer. I mean, this is one of the few times you could ever get all of these conference commissioners and university presidents to agree on something. It's easy to agree that they all need more money right now. And I think that even if there is no college football season in 2020, there's such a financial hole right now that has to be climbed out of by everyone. It's going to take 5 years or more probably to accomplish that. And so to me, even if you don't play this season, you need to start next season with an expanded playoff, because my belief is, and you know, if you've got another suggestion, let me know. But when I look at college athletics, to me, the only remaining untapped source of major revenue is expansion of the football playoff. That's the only thing that's still left out there that you could go to for more money where you can be relatively certain you're going to get it.
Brad, with what we've seen with student athletes expressing their voice and showing some power, like we've seen in the Pac-12, and them getting together, and there are more instances that are coming forward. I've heard some pushback that if you expand the college football playoff, then it's even more of a advantage taken of the student athletes, that there might be pushback to that. Is that any sort of fear, do you think, for an expansion of the college football playoff, that maybe the student athlete will say, no, you're not going to make many more millions off of us in that type of scenario of an expanded playoff?
I think there's some of that. Now, obviously, the normal conversation around expansion of the playoff is going to say, you got too many games. You're already looking at two teams playing 15 games, and if you add one more, that's 16, and that's an NFL schedule. And so that argument would still exist next year and beyond. But for this year, you know, you could add another game, and you're still going to play fewer games than you would have in a normal season, at least for the teams that get all the way to the end. So I don't think that argument holds a lot of weight this year, but definitely it is something that could become a factor. And look, I think this season, we'll just keep it to the Pac-12 player group that made its demands. I think the least likely demand for them to get, you know, any type of concession on is the revenue sharing, and that may only be for the simple fact that everyone's going to lose money this year. What revenue are you sharing? Like, everyone's taking a hit. So it was an unusual time to ask for revenue sharing when you know that everyone's about to lose money. But certainly if things do get back to normal and they have enough leverage, look, hey, to me, it's the American way, right? I mean, this is free market at work. And, if you've got some leverage, use it. It may backfire on you. Or it may work out to your advantage, but you got a right to try. So I don't think there's anything to be gained this particular season. But yeah, moving forward, that could be a situation where schools are you know, going to have to share some of that revenue. But I think that's going to happen anyway. I think they're already going to have to share some of that playoff revenue. The question is, would you rather have more of it that you're going to share or less of it that you're going to share? Because either way, your overall take is going to be greater as a university or as a conference, the more the total package is worth. So I don't know that ultimately that's a deal breaker, but it is certainly a big question as to how much progress could the players make on this front as far as getting some sort of revenue sharing, because that's a slippery slope when you start bringing other sports into it.
Last couple of things with Brad Edwards, talking college football from ESPN. So, Brad, the SEC hasn't decided how they're going to do their 9th and 10th game yet. It'll likely either be the 2021 and 2022 crossovers added, or it could be a strength of schedule model. What do you think would be the best way for the SEC to add their two games?
Well, if the SEC's primary interest, and I don't know what their interest is, but if their primary interest is making sure they have a team in the playoff, I would set it up to make sure that what you think are your best teams are not going to be added games against some of the better teams in the other division. So in other words, don't put Alabama and Florida against each other. Don't put LSU and Georgia against each other. And however you want to make that happen, it's fine. But I think, you know, when we look at the selection committee and its history, and of course this would be a really unusual season where they would have to maybe make some exceptions to the way they've typically done things. But the reality is still that the loss column has always been the biggest factor in determining who gets into the playoff. And if you're already playing 10 conference games in the toughest conference that there is, if you were to make it more difficult by having the best teams play each other, then you're I won't say guaranteeing, but you're making it way more likely that someone is going to finish up in the league with two losses. I mean, the champion is going to have two losses. And if that's the case, would the selection committee leave out a two-loss SEC team if every other power league had a champion with no more than one loss? It's at least possible. So that's how I think the SEC should look at it. As much as, you know, fans would love to see those games, I think players love to play the games against the better teams. I think you're concerned as the SEC about missing out on a playoff chance, especially when there's been like one national championship game in the last 15 years or something that hasn't had an SEC team in it. It's crazy to think of being left out, but certainly this type of schedule opens the door to that.
Brad, there have been about 6 to 8 players opting out. Some are bigger names, some are not. I wonder if you think we'll see an avalanche of that. Do you think this number could reach as much as 40 or 50 as far as college players opting out this season?
I do. I think there are a lot of them that are waiting, that don't really see the purpose in it right now. They're waiting to see whether there is even a season to begin with, which would make it, you know, where it would be a moot point. They wouldn't have to announce anything publicly and risk angering people. But, you know, the conversation had been going on about, you know, if the season got pushed back to the spring, would, you know, elite players play? And now, you know, we're seeing, not necessarily for the same reason, obviously, but we're seeing the concern here. And it's been expressed by some guys who are really talented who could go in the first round. And I don't think that this is unrelated. Even though it's COVID-related, I don't think it's unrelated to their draft prospects. So, it wouldn't be surprising to me if on top of having, guys just purely for health reasons, you had a handful of others who were wanting to protect their draft status and didn't want to get in a situation where, you know, they had health issues and couldn't train for 2 or 3 months or something like that, and their draft stock went down. So I do think we'll see a lot more of it, and I don't want to be alarmist about it, but I think there's a chance that something like that could impact the national championship race. I mean, you've got a few teams that are really loaded in talent, and if a couple of them, you know, lost several starters due to this and the others didn't, then I think that automatically gives an advantage to the ones that, you know, that are able to preserve their starting lineup.
Fantastic stuff as always, Brad. Thank you so much for giving us a few minutes while your power's out. Hope that gets back going here real soon, and we'll catch up with you again real soon.
All right. Strange times. You know, we've been through so much this summer that a few days without power, you just shrug your shoulders and move on.
Exactly. Be safe and healthy, Brad. Thank you.
All right. See you guys.
Thanks, Brad.
All right. That is Brad Edwards from ESPN.